Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 2 minutes after 9 a.m., March 9th, 2010. With me today is my co-chair Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Thomas, Senator Elton, excuse me, Egan.
Old habits.
We're using the same town and the same starting letter there, Senator Egan.
Whatever.
We have one bill on the agenda today, Senate Bill 305, dealing with separation of oil and gas and a production tax. This is the first hearing on this bill, and the intent today is to have our legislative consultants walk with us through the bill and answer some preliminary questions, if any, from committee members. We will not be taking public testimony today. Public testimony will be scheduled for Thursday, March 11th. For those that are curious, as you all know, that there was two bills read across to the Senate Finance Committee referral yesterday, Senate Bill 305 and then 306, which is dealing with the same subject matter and just a little different version. We are not going to be taking up Senate Bill 306. Again, we're not going to be taking up 306. We're going to Senate Bill 305, which is on before us today, will be the vehicle to move forward. And with us is our legislative consultants, Chuck Logsdon and Roger Marks. And if they could come forward, please. What I want them to do initially, because Mr. Marks hasn't been here in quite some time, and Chuck Logsdon has been in adjacent tables when we spent 2 weeks going through the tax structure. I would like them to briefly introduce themselves, of course, for the record, who they represent, talk a little bit about their background and who they're working for in this process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Charles Logsdon, Chuck Logsdon, and I'm with the company Logsdon and Associates. And my background, a little on my background, I was the chief petroleum economist for the state from 1979 through 2004, became quite familiar with the oil and gas production tax. Subsequent to my retirement, I actually was working with the gas, Stranded Gas Act, and part of that attempt at negotiating a fiscal regime involved changing from the old ELF system to the net value production system through the PPT, which eventually became ACES, and that's what we're here to talk to you about today.
If you could stop there, who you are a consultant with?
Yes, my company.
Legislative Budget and Audit.
And I'm working for Legislative Budget and Audit. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Which is a nonpartisan.
Committee. Thank you.
Committee, a joint committee with the House and the Senate. And for those at home, that's the body that we use to hire consultants when we need technical help on issues. In the last several years, there's been a lot of that needed in the oil and gas arena. Yeah. Mr. Marks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Roger Marks, and I'm working with Logsdon and Associates under the arrangement with Legislative Budget and Audit to assist in analyzing gas taxation. Very brief background, I was a petroleum economist with the Tax Division of the Department of Revenue for 25 years. One of my major responsibilities during that time was to continually analyze North Slope gas commerciality. I retired about a year ago and started my own private practice.
Okay. Thank you. And if I could just have you guys then just go ahead and go through your presentation. I've asked them to do a brief high-level overview of the gas and oil tax regime Again, this is extremely high level, so it'll only take probably 20 minutes or so, and then we'll go into the subject matter, just for those people, particularly that come and go out of this subject matter more than us, so they can follow along in the meatier part of the discussion coming in about 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to start out with a brief presentation laying out the rationale for the bill, and then Dr. Logsdon will present a sectional describing the mechanics of how the bill operates. So the basic premise of the bill is, under current law, oil and gas are taxed together. Their tax rate is determined based on their joint operating characteristics. However, oil is worth much more than gas, and because of that, the combining mechanism in the tax materially reduces oil taxes when gas is introduced, even though the oil operations are unaffected. A lot of this was discussed 2 weeks ago by Dr. David Wood, Dan Dickinson, the administration. We'll briefly review the same material they did, just sort of illustrate why there is the problem. So what drives all this is that although oil and gas are produced together, oil is a much different resource than gas, and it's valued much different. Oil and gas are different for two major reasons. They're both supply reasons and demand reasons. On the supply side, simply Mother Nature has made natural gas more abundant. There's relatively less crude oil. The crude oil that there is more highly concentrated, making for less competition between sellers. That's why there's OPEC for oil and nothing similar for gas. In addition, much of the oil originally put in the ground has been depleted. On the demand side, oil has fewer substitutes for the way the world works for the future. It looks like to drive a car, you're going to need gasoline for the most part, and that can only come from crude oil. There are no substitutes to crude oil to power a car. On the other hand, gas has more substitutes. Gas is used for space heat and to power to fuel power plants, and you can use alternatives such as coal, diesel, or nuclear for that. So basically, the difference between oil and gas is there's more supply of gas, and oil has fewer substitutes. As a result of that, there is a large difference in the value between oil and gas. Just looking at Alaska, what Alaska oil and gas would be worth, looking at the gross value at the point of production or the wellhead, looking at oil at a current price of $80 a barrel, less the shipping costs, the marine shipping costs about $207, I think it's the latest number. The TAPS tariff is $418, gives a gross value of $73.75 a barrel at the wellhead. If you had North Slope gas, if it were selling at a price of $6 per million BTU in the lower 48, which I might add is about 25% more than the current price, but if it were selling for $6 in the lower 48, and you subtracted out a tariff to Alberta from Prudhoe Bay, we estimate that to be about $3.54, given the cost numbers TransCanada recently released for their open season. Using a mid-range of those costs, that's our estimated tariff. If gas went through the Alberta hub, it would cost 24 cents to put your gas into the hub, get it through the hub and out of the hub, and then the tariff from the Alberta hub, the lower 48, about 85 cents. You subtract those transportation costs, would give you a gross value of $1.37 per million BTUs, the unit that the gas is measured in. Now, if we want to put the oil and the gas on an apples-to-apples basis, we can convert that gross value of gas into what we call a barrel of oil equivalent, or BOE, basis. A barrel of oil has about 5.5 million BTUs, so you can multiply that gross value of gas times 5.5 to give a BOE basis of $7.54 for a BOE basis for the gas. So on a straight BTU to BTU, apples to apples basis, in this example, oil is worth nearly 10 times as much as gas. So what is driving this bill is what ensues when you combine two substances that have vastly different values. Now, just for fun, I made a list of some other things that have BTUs and things people, you know about, oil and gas and coal. Just going down the list, wood, asphalt, shoe leather, rubber, coffee grounds, citrus rinds, corn cobs, and not to be too distractive, but you may or may not be interested to know that cow dung has 600 BTUs a cubic foot. Now, the point is, if someone suggested you might want to combine oil and shoe leather for taxation, you might want to decline that opportunity. And this is not a metaphor. The fact that the oil and gas are so much different in value is not much different than taking oil and combining those with any of those others. These others might be a little bit more extreme, but the basic point is they are worth a lot different than each other. So I'm briefly review the mechanics of the current tax to explain why this difference in value creates this problem. Again, this was done by several people a few weeks ago, and I will just review it very briefly. What I've done is describe here the mechanics of the current tax in seven steps. Number one, you have oil gross value, which is the market price less transportation. You have gas gross value, which is the market price less transportation. You add them up, you get a combined gross value. You subtract the lease capital and operating expenses to get a combined oil and gas net value. You take the combined oil and gas net value and divide it by the total oil and the total gas put on a barrel of oil equivalent to get a per barrel of oil equivalent net value. Now, just to take a little side trip here, what do we mean by barrel of oil equivalents? What that does is put oil and gas on an apples-apples basis. You can add them up.
He has a sip of water. Just for those watching at home, we've had a fairly in-depth presentations on this a few weeks ago. And for those that want to refer back to different presentations, there's some from not only the Department of Revenue, but our own consultants, Dr. Wood, that'll step through this in a much more detailed process. So this is kind of a streamlined presentation on how we get to the bottom line, but go ahead.
So just describe briefly what do we mean by barrel of oil equivalents and how they work for gas. It's a way to put gas on a barrel basis so they can be added to the oil. And just if we had 4.5 billion cubic feet a day of natural gas, a cubic foot of North Slope gas would have about 1,100 BTUs.
The 4.5 billion cubic feet per day is the estimated capacity that TransCanada is going forward with in their mining open season. Is that correct? That's where these numbers
That's correct.
From. So this capacity issue is what we're looking at with a large diameter gas line either most likely moving down into Alberta.
Correct.
We just don't want to go so fast.
Okay.
People don't follow what these numbers actually represent and where they're coming from.
Okay. Yeah, I believe that, TransCanada's plan is to build a pipeline that could take 4.5 billion cubic feet a day of natural gas from the North Slope to Alberta. And North Slope gas is enriched with natural gas liquids, ethane, butane, propane, and other heavier hydrocarbons that enhance its BTU content. Dry gas content without natural gas liquids have about 1,000 BTUs to the cubic feet. North Slope gas is expected to have about 10% north, so about 1,100 BTUs to the cubic foot.
We just stop there for a minute. Just want to mention Senator Pascavan has joined us here 10 minutes or so ago, and I forgot to mention that. And then if I could just back up for a minute, I think we want to probably take a look at page 6, bullet 5, and I think that should be slide, see slide 7.
That's correct.
We'll just make that little technical correction here. We have plenty of time this morning, so we don't have to. I'd rather walk through this slowness so everybody's following us. Then, you know, we have 2 hours. It'll probably only take us a little over an hour to get through today, so, but go ahead.
So, what we are, you know, going back to just sort of where we are now, in slide 6, we're looking at the fifth bullet, just for explaining what we mean by BOE equivalents. And so a cubic foot of North Slope gas is expected to have about 1,100 BTUs. And natural gas is measured in millions of BTUs. That's how it's valued, and that's how it's measured for tariffs and for marketing. So if we had 4.5 billion cubic feet a day at 1,100 BTUs to the cubic foot, that would give us 4.95 million MMBTUs, million BTUs, which you get 4.95 is the 4.5 BCF a day times the 1,100 BTUs to the cubic foot. So the 4.5 billion cubic feet a day would be 4.95 million MMBTUs. And a barrel of oil has about 5,500 BTUs. So the 4.5 billion cubic feet a day will have the BTU equivalents of about 900,000 barrels of oil, which is the 4.95 million MMBTUs divided by 5.5. So in converting the North Slope gas to a barrel of oil equivalent, the 4.5 BCF a day would have a barrel of oil equivalent of 900,000 barrels a day. And so if there were, say, 500,000 barrels of oil, the total number of BOEs would be 1,400,000 barrel of oil equivalents of oil and gas. So going back to slide 6, again on bullet number 5, the combined oil and gas net, BOE net value is the combined oil and gas net value divided by the total amount of oil and gas BOEs, barrel of oil equivalents. Now, based on that per BOE net value, a progressivity factor is derived, and we're going to show in a minute just how that's derived. And that progressivity factor kicks in when the net value is $30 a BOE or greater. Below $30, there's no progressivity factor, and the progressivity factor is added to the base rate, a 25% base rate, and that gives you your total tax rate, and that single tax rate for the combined oil and gas is applied to the combined oil and gas net value to get the tax. That's the basic mechanics of how the tax is derived. The progressivity mechanics. In progressivity, there's a couple of slang terms that are used, the trigger and the slope. The trigger is the price at which the net barrel of oil per barrel of oil value in which progressivity starts, and under the current law that's $30, and the slope is the rate at which progressivity increases. For every dollar the price goes up, the slope is the percent of that dollar that the progressivity rate increases, and that's 0.4% under the current law.
So Mr. Marks, so those watching at home, we subtract the operating cost and the capital expenditures, the shipping charges from Valdez to the market, the TAPS tariff, the pipeline costs, all that stuff is subtracted out.
Right, when we start with the per barrel of oil equivalent net value, that's the market price less the transportation costs, which includes the shipping and pipeline tariffs, and then the operating and capital lease development costs get subtracted out. So it's the net value. That's you can think of that as profit. Okay. And And so the formula for the progressivity surcharge, again, which is added to the base rate, is the net per BOE value minus $30, and that's multiplied times 0.004. So an example here, if the net value were $50 per BOE, the base tax rate is 25%. The progressivity surcharge would be 50 minus 30, which is 20, times 0.004, which is 8%. So that would be the progressivity surcharge, and added to the 25% base rate would be a total 33% tax rate that would be applied to the total net value of the oil and gas. And just an asterisk here, after the net value hits $92.50, the slope gets reduced from 0.4% to 0.1%. So how does the introduction of gas, or the combining of gas with oil, affect taxes? Again, this was discussed in detail several times a few weeks ago, and I'll briefly review the mechanics of how that happens. I'll get my pointer here, and I'll try very hard not to blind you, Mr. Chairman, accidentally. If we just concentrate here on the oil alone column, let's say the market price is $80, today's price, and let's just say, assume transportation costs, the shipping and taps were $5, you'd have a gross value of $75. And let's say your lease, your upstream lease, operating and capital costs were $20, that would give you a net value of $55 a barrel. So you'd have a base tax rate of 25%. The progressivity, you would take 55 minus 30, which is 25, multiply that times 0.004, and that would give you a progressivity surcharge of 10% for a total tax rate of 35%. Now let's say you introduce gas on top of this, and let's say gas prices are $6 in the lower 48. Your total transportation costs, including the Alberta hub and getting gas from the North Slope to Alberta and Alberta to the lower 48, let's just say that's $4.50, gives you a gross value of $1.50 for the gas. And let's just assume the lease costs for the gas were 50 cents per million BTU. Gives you a net value of a dollar per million BTU. So oil by itself had a tax rate of 35%. We've introduced gas. Now to see how the combined oil and gas work, we need to know the relative volumes. So to see what happens when oil and gas are combined, let's just say there are 500,000 barrels a day of oil. And a barrel of oil is the same as a barrel of oil equivalent, so that's 500,000 BOEs of oil, which annually would be about 183 million barrels a year. For the gas, the 4.5 BCF a day would be, again, 4,950,000 million BTUs a day. Again, back from where we just talked about BOEs,
we'll have a brief have at ease. You're on slide 9.
Right. So just going back to slide 7 again, we said the 4.5 BCF a day would have 4.95 billion MMBTUs a day, which is 900,000 BOEs equivalents a day. So here again, the daily BOEs for the gas would be 900,000 BOEs a day, or 329 million BOEs a year for the gas. So if we combine the oil and gas, the oil, again, net value, $55, for 183 at 183 million barrels a year, a net value of $10.038 billion dollars. These are in millions of dollars, these figures here. The gas, a net value of $1 per million BTU, over a year that would be $1.807 million BTUs, and for a total gas value of $1.807 billion. For the gas, you add them up, the total oil and gas net value is $11.844 billion. Your total BOEs, when you add that 183 for oil and the 329 for gas, it's 511 total BOEs. And due to division, you get a net BOE value of $23.18. So the two things to notice here, number one, the net value when you combine for the oil loan was $55. When you combine them with the gas, it drops $23.18. And because of that, you had a progressivity of 10%, and that dropped to zero. Progressivity only kicks in over $30. So in this example, you've gone from 10% progressivity, 35% total rate, to no progressivity, 25% total rate. The rate has dropped 10 percentage points, and that's 10 percentage points less that's going to apply to the oil. And so what ensues from that, and what the magnitude of this, this was laid out by the Department of Revenue in their February 24th presentation a couple weeks ago to this committee, called Progressivity, Profitability, Parity Gas. I believe you have a copy. So the magnitude of what this effect does, the more oil and gas have different values, the more their values diverge, or the more they have a different, you know, the more oil is relatively higher than gas, the more the net value gets diminished when it can get combined with gas, the more progressivity drops and the more the tax drops. So just looking at the examples the Department of Revenue put out there a couple weeks ago, that what they looked at was $8 gas compared to $75 oil, $100 oil, and $120 oil. This goes to progressivity factor by itself. At $75 is 5.38%, $100 15.38%, $120 23.38%. When you combine, the progressivity factors drop to zero at $75, 3.59%, at $100, and 6.79%, $120. The total reduction in the progressivity factor, 5.38% at $75, 11.79% at $100, and 16.59% at $120. The oil alone tax at the three prices, $1.7 billion, $4 billion, $6.4 billion. If gas had been taxed by itself, which is what this bill would do, the taxes would be $1.1 billion at $8. If taxed separately, well, let's see, the total tax, if taxed separately, if oil and gas were taxed separately, the total tax would be 2.8% at $75 oil and $8 gas, would be $2.8 billion annually at $75 oil, $5.1 billion at $100 oil, and at $120 oil, $7.5 billion annually. If you compute the tax combined like it's done currently, the combined tax would be 2.5 at $75 oil, $4 billion at $100, and $5.5 billion at $120. So the difference, the annual tax reduction from combining at $75, $300 million a year, at $100, $1.1 billion, and $120, $2 billion a year, the reduction in tax from combining them under the current law. So what this bill attempts to do is fix this by separating out oil and gas. Again, under the current law, there's a base tax rate of 25% plus the progressivity. This bill removes the progressivity on gas, and the progressivity on oil continues to be calculated just on oil, just on the oil net value per barrel. And so as a result of that, the exclusion of gas in the progressivity calculation for oil will make sure that oil taxes do not get reduced when gas is introduced. Now, this bill simply solves the critical issue of making the split between oil and gas. Obviously, there is an alternative bill 306 out there that puts progressivity in there for gas. We've been asked to sort of focus on 305. Again, what it does is just show mechanically how to make the split, and it solves the main critical issue.
And if we could, just because you had mentioned 306, the committee has no intention of bringing 306 onto the table, just so the public doesn't misinterpret the two bills read across yesterday in the Senate to the committee. The vehicle for dealing with this issue will be the vehicle in front of us, 305.
So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Logsdon, who is going to do a sectional analysis, explain the mechanics of how the bill separates oil and gas.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I have to bring up another piece of software.
We'll have a brief at ease and get it up. The monitor, I didn't see him back there. But he is definitely back there. Mr. Logsdon, go ahead and continue.
Thank you. I think Roger did a pretty good job of setting up just exactly the problem that is addressed in SB 305. Essentially, as he stated, this bill is intended basically to separate oil and gas production in two separate substances for purposes of oil and gas, the oil and gas production tax, and more specifically, it's designed to correct to change the way the progressive element in the current tax is calculated with respect to oil and gas by separating gas out. In section one, there is specific language in E2. That specifically identifies the production of oil for progressivity rate purposes, which is what is in section G of 4355.01.1. When you look at G, you will notice that there are a number of changes, and all of those changes are designed, first of all, to take out the language per BTU equivalent, and also taking out gas, because those are the two key words that define the combination of gas with oil to calculate the progressivity tax schedule that's outlined. If you follow down through G1 and 2, you'll note the two slopes. When the price per barrel is above $30 a barrel, progressivity kicks in at the rate of 0.4% for every dollar that the net value per barrel is above 30, to a maximum trigger point of 92.50, which is covered in G2, where the rate the slope drops to 0.1% per dollar increase in net production value. The key thing to see here is that, very simply, gas has been removed from the calculation of the progressivity element of the tax rate. In Section 3, we're talking basically about, we start to move into one of the, some of the elements of the production tax that address the taxation outside of the North Slope. One of those, and actually addresses the North Slope itself, but in Section 3, we're really talking about the Cook Inlet. And as you may know, the Cook Inlet is, taxes on the Cook Inlet are limited to the lesser of the tax, the net tax that we've been talking about, the tax on net, the gross value of the point of production, less the upstream cost, the least cost of operating capital, or what tax would have been paid under the regime in place for the 12 months ending March 2006. What that really means is you take your taxable oil and it's taxed at what it would have been taxed at had it been sold at the average price and the average tax rate of that time period as calculated under the ELF, the old ELF law. So the only thing that changes there is there's a reference change because if you recall back in E, if you turn back to E1 of the first section, you'll note that that's the section that refers to the base tax rate of 25%. So basically, it appears that section is E as a generic way is addressed in the initial, in the original statute, as in the current law. Now there's a cross-reference to actually the base rate that tax will, that in the absence of progressivity for gas, it will be taxed at the base rate of 25%, just like oil will be. So once again, it's just changes that ensure that everywhere in the statute that any reference to progressivity it does not affect gas. So if we move on to Section 4, this is another interesting one. This is another exception for the way in which the net tax applies, and that's to property outside the Cook Inlet. This is property outside the Cook Inlet basin used in the state, which is going to be subject to the same rules that we just went over for Cook Inlet gas. Now, once again, this is the pointer, and this is back to the base rate, because this is just another way of making it very clear that gas will not be subject to the progressive rate for this particular type of gas production that's identified in the current statute. We move on to Section 5. You're going to see the same thing repeated. If you go through Section 5, that is a section that deals with how the payment of the taxes is calculated, and the key section there is that you're looking at 2A1, and in this case we're talking once again about a number of different areas that produce oil and gas in the state, and every change in here is designed to make sure that only the oil produced in any of these areas, whether it's the what we just talked about, the Cook, outside of Cook Inlet sedimentary basin, but you know, sold in Alaska to the North Slope itself, to there's actually an allowance section Section 5, no, that's only in A1. So that's I think, all we have to worry about there. Okay. There is allowance for some oil that would be found outside of the North Slope and not in the Cook Inlet well as well. I think that's in section, that is in section 1B of 1B of section 5. Anyway, I guess you might be thinking in terms of Bristol Bay or the Nanana Basin, but the key concept still is that every time you see a reference to the use or to the use of a progressivity factor or the calculation of a progressivity factor, it is for oil only. It is not for gas. And that's the pattern that flows through the entire statute. The next section, the prior section dealt with how you pay your taxes, and the section 6 really, this is covers AS 4355-160, which ties back to the tax base and how you actually calculate the net production value. Once again, every place that you see in this section where there is a reference, and there are no references to a progressive tax rate being affected by this calculation, the annual production tax value in the first section, it references E, but once you get into section 4355-1, did I have this right? Yeah, 162. You'll note that references AS 4355-01G. Now, that's throwing a bunch of numbers around, but if you remember back to that, that's one of the beginning sections of the statute. That G is the section that lays out the progressivity rates. So if this part of the statute is referring back to that, then it's necessary when drafting the legislation to go back and parse out any references to gas, because gas is not subject to the methodology in G to calculate the progressivity. Gas is not a part of that. It's been split out. The final change is in, well, not the final change, but the next change is in section 7. This is another part of the language that controls the taxable net value, and because this also points to 4355-011G, any reference to gas is eliminated, and there's just the one reference in that statute in C. Finally, in Section 8, the bill takes effect immediately, and that statutory site there, AS01-1007C, really just says it'll take effect after the governor's signature or the day after the expiration period of any gubernatorial action. So in conclusion, just if I could kind of wrap up kind of what Roger and I have said, and basically this bill separates oil from gas in calculating the progressivity factor, which is both a function of how you calculate the net value at the point of production. You saw the dilution effect, and there was also an effect depending on what the barrel is of equivalent, whether it's distorted, whether it's greater or less than the value is greater or less than the actual energy value. But it gets rid of all of that and strictly focuses on the progressivity being calculated on the basis of what's the net value of oil and how does that compare to $30 a barrel. At the same time, if you're reading it, you'll see that there's more than just a progressivity factor. The base rate on both oil and gas, it's at 25. The only thing is for gas without progressivity in 305, it's a flat rate of 25%. For oil, there'll be a progressivity rate with the triggers and the slopes outlined in the current statute only based on just the oil net value per barrel of production.
Do we have any preliminary or initial questions for Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you very much, Mr. Logsdon, for this excellent presentation. The question I've had all along is, what advantages from your standpoint do you see for not having progressivity in the natural gas production tax?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, that's something that can be looked at. Task was to separate oil and gas because of this, I guess a lot of people have called it the dilution effect on the tax rate. From a tax theory standpoint, really, what Roger presented and what we've talked about is that one tax theory is that you would like to match up your tax on substances or whatever activity so that it matches the ability to pay, which would suggest that a lower valued commodity should be taxed probably at a lower rate than a higher. That's just a general principle. We have not at this point in time, it would be an option, but at this point that's really getting into the realm of setting tax policy that is more complicated than just speculating on what's good and bad, because as you know, taxes can have positive effects on state revenue, they can have negative effects on the source of the revenue, and finding that point is something that probably would need would require a deliberation by the body making that decision. So at this point in time, I don't really have an opinion on that.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
So from what I'm hearing you say, there are no advantages for the state as far as encouraging exploration or for the producers to go ahead and spend more money investing in areas that might have those kind of things related to the progressivity?
Well, this doesn't change the basic incentive structure that's already in the statute, which is you get to deduct all of your capital and operating costs on a cash basis.
Thank you, Mr.
Plus,
Chairman.
You can get credits for the capital.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Logsdon, is there there is a small amount of gas sold at Prudhoe Bay now between producers and into Alyeska. Any particular effect on that with this activity?
Maybe I could ask Roger to answer
right,
that question.
Right now under 4355.010, any gas sold in state is subject to the old Cook Inlet ELF provisions, which would be unaffected by it. So progressivity is not affecting that gas now, and obviously it wouldn't affect it after.
Okay, thank you.
Have any other initial questions? Okay, well, thank you too for putting that presentation together fairly quickly yesterday evening. I know you guys worked late into the evening for us so we could stay on schedule, and it's certainly appreciated. What we're gonna do is, when we look at, we'll bring this issue back on March 11th, Thursday, for a public hearing, and hopefully we'll have some input from the administration, and we're going to work with the other interested parties that may want to come forward and testify to try to get our schedule and their schedule matched up so we can continue to work on this issue in a timely manner. Tomorrow, 9 a.m. March 10th, we'll have five bills on the agenda. Task Force for Higher Education, which is Senate Bill 221, Senate Bill 269, Economic Stimulus Bonds, Senate Bill 168, Trauma Care Centers, Senate Bill 210, Military Development and Child Custody, Senate Bill 266, Violent Crime Emergency Compensation. See everybody back at 9 a.m. Meeting adjourned.